Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. When you talk about craft beer regions in Australia, one that rarely gets mentioned in the first few is South Australia. Why is that? There's some great beer being brewed in South Australia, but maybe it gets overshadowed by it being known more as a premium wine region. Or maybe it's because one of the OG breweries didn't actually have a home at the start there. I don't know the answer. Maybe they need to shout a little louder about their brewing chops, because there are some great beers being brewed over there. And that brings me to Little Bang Brewing, one of those breweries pumping out great craft beer in South Australia, and my guests for this episode. Home brewers Phil and Ryan built themselves a cool backyard brewery that grew into the venue that now brews thousands of litres of beer a week, seats over 250 people, and pumps out some great food. So, to help me tell the story of how it all began and how they got to get here, welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, the guys that started all of this, with permission of from their wives, of course, Ryan Davison and Phil Kemp.
Nicely done. I was fighting myself not to interrupt you there.
I was like, fucking no, hold on. We're yelling loud and clearly, but the bloody eastern states just don't hear anything because they're losers.
They're just upset.
We love them. Except Dan Andrews can go suck a big fat one right now. So, yeah. I want new Victorians know it. Fucking get those Liberals out. I mean, Labour. Shit, it all went wrong.
Everyone needs to know right off the bat that Phil is wearing a special T-shirt that I've made just for him that says, "My opinions do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Little Bang Brewing Company." whatever comes out of this mouth.
We all know that Dan Andrews suck, all right? So we're going to – pretty much all of South Australia currently hates him. So
Well, the weird thing is –
How's your corruption going, you prick?
As South Australians, I think – we're used to, for decades and decades, eating it from the places where the TV comes from, which is Sydney and Melbourne, it being the brunt of jokes for being the town that's a bit boring. But as slowly but surely, as you know, as we saw generations of people move into state, all the interesting people would move into state for the opportunity, we're seeing, as we get older, we're seeing everyone slowly migrate back home because there's actually not quite so much violent competition for attention here as there is over there, and you can actually afford to have a house over here too, and we've actually got a wonderful little gourmet culture going on in this state.
You could almost say the same thing about my home state of Tasmania.
I was going to say that I think Tasmania, out of every other state, Tasmania cops it worse than South Australia.
Yeah.
Probably.
So, yeah.
We're all having sex with our sisters and stuff down here, apparently.
Yeah. Two-headed bullshit and all this kind of stuff.
We were well used to it, and we were just used to ignoring it. It was like, fuck you. It was the usual response. But it seems to me like now, it was just this last one when Dan Andrews, is that his name? I don't follow Melbourne news that much.
Just call him Cockhead. Yeah. Cockhead. How's your corruption going, Cockhead?
Yeah. when he had that little slight, it was like, no, hang on. This is the one time when we know for sure that we've got it on you guys. Our pubs are open, and we handled this thing absolutely right. If it's only because we know for sure that we're right now, that's why we're also up. And I was like, no, hang on, fuck you. You don't get to just cast
illusions
as usual. We're like, no, we fucking got it this time, son. Because we've all got to face it. We've all been to Melbourne. We've all been to Sydney. There's a lot to do. There's a lot to do 24 hours a day. You can get yourself into an awful lot of trouble in those towns, and it's great. But this time, we win. We win this time.
Congratulations. Yeah. You won the coronavirus race.
I should have put my hand up when that I was about to start soapboxing.
No, I look at your so we get the visual here of the audio feed, and Ryan's is heavily dense and everyone else is very quiet at the moment. So, yeah, it's an indication Ryan needs to shut the fuck up.
Listeners, this could go anywhere tonight. I cannot promise what we're going to talk about, but we'll get there eventually. So,
You know where it's going to go? It's going to go downhill.
Of course.
We'll give you context. We'll give you a micro context for what's happened just today. There's been, as most days, there's been an enormous amount of brewing and packaging happening today because things are just all pear-shaped as they have been for months. We're all just flying by the seat of our pants like crazy right now. And then we've had three meetings in a row, which have all been extremely weird. And now we've had several
beers. Yes.
Several meetings worth of beers in that time, and now it's like, oh, now we're gonna chat with our old mate Chris on the computer thing.
What have you got in your hand now? What are you drinking?
I've got a blank can on my desk that I brought up a while ago off the canning line because I was going to drink it while I was talking to some guys in Finland about some brewing stuff. And it's actually Schwangberry Blackberry.
Ah.
Schwang Blackberry? I don't know, whichever one it is. Schwangberry
Blackberry. Schwang beer.
I can't keep up with it, but it's warm. Oh. I just drank something from some garage project. Now I moved on to this. So,
what do you got, Ryan?
I'm on the garage project. Well, I wasn't. I just finished it over that course of that rant. garage project Golden... Something. It's a
Golden Path. It's Golden absolutely Path. Bloody fantastic.
Nipah, and it is wonderful. I actually think I know Nipahs traditionally land in that 6-7 sort of space, and that people like things that look exactly like a glass of orange juice. But I feel like this is where this style, which I'm really warming to, I was a little cynical about it at first. I feel like this is where they land so well in this session strength. You've got so much flavor, and it's got a really crisp, snappy finish to it, but really full a flavor, and that hazy body gives it a you don't get that usual sort of mid-strength what am I missing kind of feeling. I think it's they've nailed it as usual.
That's a mid-strength, is it?
Yeah, it's 4%. The GP's something. Yeah, Golden Path, that's the one.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
It's really good. I don't know if we got a really good fresh keg, but it's absolutely cracking. So
yeah. Well, I'm drinking the Van Diemen Farm Juice tonight. Thanks for asking. Yeah.
Oh, Van Diemen Farm Juice. Who's Van Diemen? So is it a Tassie brewery?
Yeah, well, Tatchell up in the north of Tasmania. He's got a farmhouse brewery up there with cool ships and grows his own fucking everything. And he's a friend of mine. He's does a bloody great job. He's really good. Wicked. You should seek out his beers online because there's some.
Can we get them on the mainland?
He does mail order, and he's all sorts of different using his local yeast and local barley. He's got his own hop field. He's
excellent.
Spontaneous ales, all that sort of cool farmhouse stuff. It's really great stuff.
He's got way too much time on his hands. That's what he does.
I know Tassie's got this amazing beer history. Tassie was just the place where you would grow the hops for ages, and they had Cascade and Bogues, these behemoths, and you literally cut the state down the middle and you get Cascade on one side of the street and Bogues on the other, and people will punch you out if you ordered one in the wrong fucking
pub. Pretty much. Yeah.
But ever since, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was Two Meter Tall sort of really broke the mold there and broke through with this wild, crazy Van Diemen's Land weirdness. And has that led to
a
bigger
good swing. Yeah. There's about nearly 40 breweries now.
Wild beer culture down there?
There's a couple. There's a couple that do that. There was, you got Van Diemen, you got Two Minute Tall, you had Willie Simpson's up the north as well, and then you got a lot of other just great, really, really solid craft breweries popping up all over the place. Small, medium, large.
Bruni, wonderful Bruni stuff.
Oh yeah, they're another sort of farmhouse kind of wild type setup as well.
We get them in
Preachers. Good question, but no, I went down there because we did a tap take over there about a year and a half ago or something like that.
Just under a year ago
and it was bloody good. It was solid. There's some good
there's some good Tassie beers kind of thing. And everyone in Tasmania whinges about it. I'm like, nah, you guys have got a pretty good.
Because there's still a lot of people that are very parochial to their Cascade or Bogues down here. And so the guys and girls that are brewing these new beers with more flavour and stuff, they've got their work cut out for them because it's difficult. Not only if you've got this, you know, this old mainstream sort of crowd that are drinking the beer, to get your beers off this friggin' island and into the other states is really expensive, you know. Yeah. So it's a difficult thing. But
does your state help out with that? Because I know for a fact that the Western Australian government actually subsidises freight out of WA to make it easier to get stuff.
There used to be something called freight equalisation.
I
remember hearing, when I worked for Bogues, I remember hearing freight equalisation news, but I honestly don't know the details of it, but I just know it's difficult getting containers in and out of this state. And so, you know, for the guys.
Only one of the most treacherous stretches of water there in the entire fucking world in between you and us.
Yeah.
Exactly. I've never had a good time crossing that stretch of water either. Never.
No one has.
No.
If you've been out alive, you've had a good time.
Sorry to the TT line if they're listening, but it's shit house.
Yeah, I can't do anything about it. It's goddamn planet Earth. Have a word with Gaia. You know, have a word with the giant.
Should just call it Vomit Strait or something like that.
Hope you're enjoying the episode. First up, this one's for the Facebook followers. Thanks so much for being part of this whole beer healer ride. I bloody love all the conversations that we have and the way that we can all share this craft beer gospel together. It is absolutely awesome. Now, if you're also one of the people that listens via Facebook as opposed to using Apple Podcasts or Spotify, I'm just wondering whether you might be able to help me a little bit more with spreading this craft beer gospel. All you got to do is like the post as you're listening to it. And then if you really want to go that step further, maybe share it with your mates as well. That would be awesome. But even better, join up to Apple Podcasts, like, subscribe, rate, review, all that shit. It'd just be awesome. I'd love your help. Thanks very much. I remember coming out of Port of Melbourne 1 year, and I was on the old Devil Cat, which was the high speed ferry, and we're in Port Melbourne.
That's the one I went on as well.
You got 4 hours sort of trip, and we're coming out of the bay there, and all the kids are running around laughing and carrying on. Within about 5 minutes of hitting the actual water outside the bay, there was kids spewing and throwing up, and it was dead silent.
That was the same. I did the same trip, and it was. 4 hours turned to 8 hours. They had to slow down. They couldn't do the trip and at full speed or whatever it was. And the whole place was sick. And my father and brother had taken my mother and my brother had taken seasickness tablets, and they were all right. But I said to my brother, "Well, you know, on the way back, don't take them to see how you're bloody going." And it was dead calm on the way back. The prick, and he won the bet. So, yeah. And I hate him to this day for that reason.
I think this is really interesting about Tassie, though, because you look at Cascade and Bogues. Yes, they're different breweries, and yes, people might have feelings about them down there. But let's face it, the rest of the country views those two breweries as exactly the same thing, and so does the whole beer community in Australia. They are the ones. The wonderful craft beer boom that started happening, you know, 10 years ago and is now still growing, the bite that it has taken most of is out of exactly their market share, which is what used to be called premium beer.
Yep.
Is now been dominated by craft beer, and the shrinking that the overall beer sector has seen has mainly been from premium beer.
Green bottles.
It's essentially that when everything was just rubbish lager, Bogues and Cascade were the best rubbish lager. And now craft beer has come along, and those who still like rubbish lager that's cheap keep drinking that. But those who used to be the fancy pants who like the fancy rubbish lager are now drinking craft beer, and they are hurting bad. It's actually going to be we're probably not far off from at least one of those titans of premium beer, capital P, going under and being just scrapped altogether.
As a brewery or as a trademark, do you mean? Because I mean
both of them work for the same damn business essentially.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter, but those brands being scrapped, you know, they're both owned by such gigantic companies that it's
starting to lose a bit of relevance, aren't they, really?
Well, it's like, you know, it doesn't matter all that much if a brand comes or goes because it's all part of the same behemoth. They're just putting their energies into marketing here or marketing here. It's just what part of the segment are they targeting? And it's the Crown Lager segment, which is now been decimated. You know, the polo shirt fancy Fosters was essentially what has just gone by the wayside, because people who actually wanted something premium and now have all these amazing options that have these incredible genuine integrity and backstory to them, apart from, well, other than this stuff, which Crown Lager, I don't know if people know in general, is literally just Foster's with a gold label on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Foster's
that you can drink on your yacht and feel okay about.
I haven't seen a Crown Lager around in ages. I don't even know if we have much of it down here in Tassie anymore.
For that, Chris.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm happy with that, but I just think to myself, no, I can't remember the last time I saw that. I remember my wife bought me one of those Christmas boxes once, probably 7 or 8 years ago, and I gave it back to her. I was like, nah, don't give me that, thanks. It was a nice thought, but no, thank you.
Get back to the shop. Yeah. I'll take a gift certificate, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, I got this crazy idea. Mm. What if tonight we spoke about your brewery and your journey?
No.
You want it? No. Fuck that.
Sick of that story, it's garbage. I'm actually just putting a post up right onto Facebook at the moment. I'm going to do...
Don't want to talk about it.
Are you on at, or can I do hashtag beer healer?
You can at me, yeah. At me, beer healer. While you're doing your.
Am I talking too much? Is that what it is? I'm going to run downstairs and get a beer. I'll give Phil a chance to chat.
All right,
he's probably too. He's now posting to Facebook because he's not getting a word in edgewise.
That's okay. Well, I want to know something.
Posting on. You'll love it.
What?
It's on its way.
Before you guys got into shut
media.
The fuck up for a minute, both of you. Jesus Christ. Right, let's straighten this thing up. You guys are half maggoted, but I want to talk about the brewery tonight. But first, before we get into that, I want to know this whole thing around your game development background, and obviously you guys are self-confessed nerds. But just very quickly, I want to know, because I think you guys are similar age to me. What was your first computer or computer game console that you had when you were a kid?
So I had, my parents bought me an Atari 1024, which was a computer back in the day.
It's like the Amiga.
It's exactly the same as the Amiga 512 at the time. They were basically competing against each other. So, yeah. And they bought me STOS, which is ST operating system.
Yep.
So,
yep.
And I was meant to learn programming. I never learned programming.
No. Yeah. And what about you, Ryan? What do you have?
I had Atari 2600 at my mate's house, and I wanted to go there every single weekend. And I think over the course of several years, I convinced my parents that I wanted no birthday presents for like 3 years so that I could have a Commodore 64.
Okay.
And
you've just shown me that I think, Ryan, you and I are closer together in age, because my first was a Commodore 64. And yeah, Phil, buddy, you were like the next generation. Weren't they the 16-bit computers or whatever they were with the Amiga and the Atari ST?
Yeah, but I was So I was playing around with the Amstrad on tape deck and a C64 as well.
Now
so,
there you go. All right, we're all must be around about the 40s.
Well, Phil, you were on the message boards, weren't you? You were way back.
I'll tell you something that I was really, really bad back in the day, which is basically so the bulletin board system. I was heavily into. I was best in Australia in playing Descent, because you could do multiplayer Descent, and Doom 2. I was third in Australia at the time. So,
hello, ladies.
The new invention of playing games, first person shooters with a mouse. So who would have thought?
God, you must have been fighting off the women with a stick.
Yeah.
if you ever got out of your bedroom.
Yeah, that's right.
So then I'm guessing that, being that you guys are absolute nerds, that Little Bang must be related to the Big Bang TV show. Is there some?
No, nothing to do with it at all.
Seriously? Oh, I thought that was going to be the straight out link.
I never watched the show.
It's a little known fact that before it was a TV show, it was actually fucking theory from fucking Einstein.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that.
What it is. I appreciate the show, but yes, we were. No, the Little Bang name was actually my wife Kerry developed that name, which was to do with the fact that this business was born out of Phil and I doing backyard science together every single day and every single weekend and boring the shit out of everyone we knew talking about fermentation science everywhere we went, including our poor wives. And she referred to it as the little bang to be like the big bang. That
Righto. Now I've got you.
Then there was a TV show and, you know, I don't mind if they might have popularized the idea a little more. That's fine. some more people through our door expecting to see Sheldon.
And then being very disappointed.
The blonde chick. That's what everyone's expecting to see.
Kaylee Cuoco, whatever her name is.
Yeah, she's a lovely girl.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. So are you guys school friends or something like that?
No.
No, we met in gaming. We're not
friends. Still not friends.
Yeah, we're not friends.
So what did you make the gaming?
If we go back to the history of where we started together, so there was a computer games company in South Australia called Ratback Games, who was quite well. I met Ryan there. Ryan was a tester there. I was an artist, 3D artist, and that's kind of where we connected. But we were always in very different disciplines. Ryan was in testing, and I was in art.
We both spent a lot of time dealing with particular kinds of social rejects,
mainly programmers of all people.
We both dealt with programmers. That was our shared burden. You had the art jerks to deal with, and I had the test jerks to deal with.
Tester losers.
You had sort of failed artists under your wing, and I just had failed people.
Yeah. And they can't deny it either. That's a funny thing.
So. And so did you both use brewing as a way to forget about the shit that was going on at work?
So what happened was basically in the Australian games industry where you're talking, so at the time it was Xbox 360, PS3 kind of generation was towards the end there in 2008. But Australia was looked as a workhorse for pumping out not AAA rated titles, but kind of mediocre titles. It was based on the dollar kind of thing. The Aussie dollar was pretty low against the US dollar. We were cheap. You're talking a project might be 18 months long and it'll be, I don't know, six million Australian dollars or something like that to do it or something. So, but once the GFC hit and the Aussie dollar went parity plus, that was it. That was the industry dead. So,
okay.
Yeah. And so we're part of a reasonably – well, the biggest gaming industry firm in Australia. We get zero support from the government. And, you know, they employed 450 people over three states. And once the GFC hit, that was it. I can't remember what the wage bill was. It was like $3 million a month or something like that. And it all fell over. So this was the third company I'd worked for that had been – that had gone under over a period of about 12 years through no fault of their own. One of them was shut down because competition bought them out and shut them down. That was Ratback Games. And the other one just wound up because they wanted to change directions. So when the GFC hit and it all collapsed, I took a year off to chill out and renovate the house and do stuff and started brewing homebrew there because that's the way of saving money, supposedly.
Oh, yes, just of course.
Yeah, just of course. Also known as getting more drunk. So,
I had a chat with a homebrewer recently who was like the SA Brewing Club came and had beers at our place recently. And we had that moment where it was like if you're – it's that moment you have between homebrewers where it's like you're surely past that point where you think you're homebrewing because you're saving money. anyone who's homebrewing to save money is either a real tight ass and doesn't like beer very much, or they're fooling themselves, you know, like to make decent
beer. You probably do save money, though, but you just consume three times as much. Yeah. So you're really not saving money.
You've got infinite access to beer. And this, if you're actually really interested in the process, as we both were, you just go down that rabbit hole so hard of what else can I get?
Trademark.
We won't touch that IP infringement there. For myself, I just worked at my local pub. I just got a job at my local bottle shop, and I hassled them about beer so much because I was nerding out about it and homebrewing as well. They finally said, look, if you'll just stop talking about beer, we'll let you buy beer for the pub. Just don't lose us any money, and please don't talk to us about beer anymore.
Okay.
So that's how I got in contact with the suppliers and ended up being one of two craft beer salespeople in Adelaide in 2012.
Ah, right, yeah. Okay. And then somewhere along the lines, you guys got together and thought, let's do this together in the shed.
Phil put up this lovely Facebook post of he made was it a pale ale or a lager?
It was meant to be a clone of Little Creatures pale ale I was trying to imitate. So,
It was this gorgeous, crystal clear beer sparkling in the sunlight in this picture. And I went, Jesus Christ, Phil's homebrewing. And that shit looks nothing like mine, which looks like grey river water. and we chatted. And from there on, I think we both have very much a shared desire, like what's the word, an autodidact tendency where we want to educate ourselves deeper and deeper and deeper into the topic we're obsessing on, and we were both obsessing on it at that moment. And there is no shortage of information on the internet about brewing, and most of it is from other homebrewers, and half of it, almost exactly half of it, is utterly wrong, and it is just pure wives' tale bullshit.
Mythology crap.
Yeah, we got so absorbed in sorting out the real science from the hearsay folk wisdom that it just became our whole lives, was our own personal sort of our own personal PhD project of sorting out this brewing science. Well, I don't think it ever occurred to either of us to actually do an official course in this stuff at all. You went so far as to actually get into Simon from Brew Boys regularly to actually start the stuff. But that was about as far as we went to any kind of official learning, was Phil asking Simo how stuff actually works in a real brewery like Brew Boys, and then feeding that information back to our little project.
Are you aware of Brew Boys?
I haven't heard of Brew Boys. No, I haven't heard of them, no.
So this is Simon Selly. He's still one of the top brewers in Australia, but he's just sick. He's sick of the industry more than anything. But the business has been sold a couple of years ago, and he's moved on. But extremely Hopperpotamus was probably his foray into the real truly craft stuff, which was a cracking IPA with Galaxy and Cascade. Really beautiful
monster, and it's still the best Scotch ale in the country. Seeing Double,
Seeing Double, he's won international golds left, right, and centre every year.
Okay, yeah. So he was a bit like the Yoda, was he?
I'm now employing him as my senior brewer. So there you go.
Yeah, he's our Mr. Miyagi, but with much more swearing. And yes, if you didn't catch that, we've now in that peculiar place now, years and years in. With our business sort of growing week by week, strangely, where we've now, Simon, after getting out of Brew Boys, has now come back at our place 3 days a week, working at our place as a senior brewer. And it's incredible to have our very own mentor on tap.
And he's just as terrible as I remember him as well.
It's pretty weird now to have to tell him to do something, being as he was the master, but especially when you need to just say, look, shut up, we're trying to talk business over here, Simon.
Yeah.
How did you go today, Ryan? How did you go today with him on the canning line? You were stuck on the canning line for a little bit with him. So
it's hilarious. We were singing the classics together all afternoon. That man can talk some shit. He's been doing process labour for longer than you and I have been.
I think that might be the pot calling the kettle black there, you blokes.
Yeah. He just stopped talking. Maybe that's another thing we learned from him today.
How to talk shit. I tell you what, you've come a fucking long way from a backyard shed to what you're doing now, haven't you?
Yeah, so we're on our third brewery now. I'm pretty sick of fucking building these things at the moment. So.
Are you done now? Have you got enough stainless steel around you?
No, we've run out of room again.
I saw were building rooms on rooms or something on Instagram.
Yeah, we've added – we're the only place we can go is up now, so we've expanded. I'm putting a cool room on top of my storeroom because I have nowhere else to put it.
Jesus.
For my hops. And I'm putting a boiler on top of my lab, which I have to reinforce with steel, which is tomorrow's job, because that's the only place it's going to fit because the new brew house is coming in 3 weeks.
How big's the new brew house?
Just 25 hectolitre two vessel system. So, but it's all steam. It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah. Steam, beautiful. Can you help me out with this whole steam thing? Because I talked to a lot of you blokes who talk about whether they go steam or not. What is the thing with steam? Is it purely an efficiency thing around getting it up to heat much more quickly, or is it reusing the steam?
Yeah, so it's much more. It's more energy efficient because you're basically using a secondary. System of transferring heat. It's very gentle, so you're not putting if you're using direct fired with a gas burner or something like that, you're putting 1800 degrees on the bottom of the kettle to boil it, or this we're only talking 120 degrees in total, so there's only a 20 degree differential or something like that.
Yeah,
so it's very gentle.
We've got elements in our kettle, so those things are incredibly hot. You've got one hot spot. Whereas a steam jacket, the entire vessel is evenly heated to heat up the wort. So
there's a jacket that goes around the outside of it. Is it a bit like the cooling jacket in a Braumeister?
Exactly the same thing. So you're talking a dimple plate around the outside, except all we're doing is filling it with steam.
Yeah.
It condenses, so it transfers the heat spot. It transfers the heat by changing states, changing from a vapor to a liquid. And you get really good efficiencies there. It's very controllable. Everything is good about steam. Steam is the ultimate. There's nothing better than steam. There's electric, direct fired, and then steam, and steam's the only way to go.
It's just a resource, as a resource in a working brewery too. Having steam on tap wherever you want to be is just... it's of inestimable value. If you want to clean kegs, if you want to clean tanks, just having...
You've got it plumbed in, if you like, as if you might have a gas line, you've got a steam line.
Yeah, so you've got a tool where you can convert, you can basically bypass. So the steam is steam and it's all been... It's a closed loop where you've got to adjust for minerals and stuff like that in there. But you can actually do it like a heat exchanger where you actually boil off water against the steam, and you can actually get a steam output, so you can use that to clean kegs, to sterilize kegs, or the big things, like we've got our winemaker in here, and to sterilize a barrels is incredibly hard because wood is porous, but if you can get that to 120 degrees with steam, happy days, away you go. They're fairly confident in that. So it's a nice little tool to have.
Mate, the beer nerds that are listening here tonight are just going to be going off their rockers hearing this shit from you guys.
They're going to be jizzing over this stuff. Yeah. but this is the thing. It's a huge investment to go to steam. It's so if we look at to do electric or gas fired, you're looking at to do a 25 hectolitre system, you're looking at 10 grand or less, 8 grand,
Yep.
But you go to steam, you're looking at 100 grand.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's a big difference in cost. So.
But I'm tipping you guys have done your numbers.
No, it all works out, but it's basically.
This, Chris, is where we really ask our wives permission.
Can I reuse that joke from earlier?
Much better with numbers than we are. And they're much better knowing what
they're doing. I haven't even tried to begin to understand the numbers. So.
I think the division of labor since this business has consumed our wives as well. The division of labor seems to be Phil and Ryan are in charge of things that are happening today and maybe tomorrow, and our wives are in charge of actually looking at the future.
That sounds like my place.
You should be careful then. So you can relax. Yeah. Just relax now because they're in charge. So.
Fuck tomorrow. Hey, tomorrow might never happen.
Yeah, yeah. So, Chris, you homebrew, yeah?
Yeah, I'm just not very good. That's all.
No, well, yeah, whatever. But so you understand mash temperatures and stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So steam also gives, like, our mash tun has got jackets. The new one's coming in a few weeks' time. It's got jackets on it. So yep. We can also we can do step mashing. We can do that.
But
not,
yep.
Even that, I'm probably not that interested in even step mashing, but hitting our numbers every single time.
Yeah.
Is a possibility with steam. Yep. Like, you can just maintain it, and you don't need to add, you know, super hot water to go to sparge and stuff like that. You can actually just step it up via the steam straight to 76 degrees. Away you go, kind of thing. Yeah, so
beautiful.
So you start to see the advantages there, and
then you get to do your like little protein rests and all that sort of stuff when you're mashing.
If you want to do it, yeah. If you want to do that kind of stuff, you can do it.
Yeah, no.
I'm not a huge. Most of we use Cooper's malt, excellent malt. If anyone out there is wondering, extremely good. Maybe a bit too good for its own good. We're getting extracts. We're getting mash efficiencies out currently at around the 95%, which is insane.
Wow. That is.
So it's a frustratingly insane because you need to do a dilute back and you need to adjust pH and all this kind of stuff. So. Highly recommend Cooper's malt to people if they want to try it out.
Nice. Hey, so just quickly on the new kit you're putting in, what was the old kit that you're getting rid of?
So this is the one that I've built up over the last few years, which was basically
bit.
A couple of milk vats with elements jammed into it. literally, I've welded a couple of elements in and 50 kilowatts in the kettle, 20 kilowatts in the HLT, and we ended up buying a mash tun from Spark Engineering in Victoria because Ryan and I both ended up with RSI in our tennis elbow from emptying the old mash tun.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yes, so, we have just a giant pot that we would empty with buckets.
Oh, shit.
We had a physiotherapist would drink at our place regularly, and every time we come in, we'd both go, "What the hell is this, mate? My elbow's fucked." And then he'd say, "Are you doing a repetitive motion like this under weight a lot?" And it's like, "Oh, emptying that mash tun. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure if it was tennis elbow or golfer's elbow. One is one way, one's the other way."
Okay.
Yeah. The great. So my pure enjoyment at the moment still is turning a knob, pressing a button, and watching the spent grain go into a bin.
Oh, nice.
Without me doing any physical labor whatsoever.
We used to fill 4 council bins with our mash each time. Yeah.
Oh, your wheelie bins?
Yeah.
And it'll take about 2 hours to empty it because we'll be doing
what?
400, 500 kilogram mashes.
That was a job.
Why are you two guys not like Greek Adonises with muscles on muscles?
Because we drink beer.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
We were fit. Ryan's going there. I don't like Ryan anymore. He's trying to be this fitness guy. I don't agree.
We used to work really hard lugging all the malt and lugging all the kegs and all that, but now we've got a forklift and we've got a mash tun. When that happens, and especially for me now as purely the sales guy, that's one thing that's happened over this period of time is, you know, we both used to do everything and then, you know, and we had a lot of crossover in what we did, and now we've both sort of differentiated out to be in the places where we actually just do things best, i.e. Phil making the best possible beer and me chatting people on email, talking a pile of shit and making silly pictures. And being chained to a desk and still being in the beer industry, especially the high calorie beer industry.
Yep.
Now I find myself in my leisure time just performing repetitive functions under weight to simulate the hard work I used to do in order to be such a fat bastard.
Who's doing the best out of the two of you? Because you both look pretty fucking similar from what I've seen on your Instagram account.
Well, twin, supposedly, according to some angry people out there.
It looks. I wasn't sure whether some of your recent Instagram photos were actually, like, you know, photoshopped of the same person side by side. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, we get that a lot, unfortunately, but
we're just chubby white guys with glasses, all right?
Yeah. And beards. Yeah.
And beards. Very nerd.
I'm calling racism at this point. As I said to the young lady at Canberra Beer Festival, if we were Asian, you wouldn't be so insistent that we look the same.
If you put me next to the two of you, we could pretty much be triplets.
Hey, that's what I like to hear. That's what we should do.
This is just what happens when you drink enough quality beer. You just, this is your default body type. Slab-like physique, fuzziness around the jowls, and probably poor eyesight, so you need some spectacles.
Yeah, I've got my glasses on tonight.
and a slightly lax grooming policy.
Got a question for you. Do you like the show? And do you want to help support the industry that we all love by spreading the craft beer gospel far and wide? Well, there's one thing you can do, and it doesn't involve putting your hand in your pocket and pulling out your credit card. Nope, just click the Apple Podcast link in the show notes and leave a review and a rating. The Apple Podcast gods do the rest, and you will feel all warm and fuzzy for doing your bit for craft beer. That's all. Back to the interview. So, guys, the basic thing with you is you sort of grown and grown and grown and grown into what you've currently got, which sounds like it's a pretty awesome system. Was it a really difficult thing for you to constantly be trying to not only grow the business but have to grow your footprint, if you like, as well? Would it have best been nicer to, at some stage, just put in a big kick-ass brewery and get the wives to approve a little bit more of the cashola and start big? Or is that just part of paying your dues and working yourselves out?
Neither of them are actually wealthy, we should add. nor are they bankers, nor are they royalty. They just had a better idea of how to spend the money in our mortgages, which was only a very limited amount, which is, honestly, two mortgages put together could only make a very, very small brewery.
No, okay. Well, that's fair enough. Yeah.
And no, this is stuff we talk about all the time. There are so many learning curves involved in our business. In the business of craft beer, which is a wonderful little cottage industry contained within a fucking gigantic oligarchy of massive multinational companies that own everything. So it's a very weird space to inhabit, especially if you don't have infinite access to capital or huge financial heads or connections or, you know, all this sort of stuff. So it's been a massive learning curve for us all the way through it. And it's actually, we've had to, you know, we do have some investors now in a very small part of the business, but for most of the life of this business, it was purely earn money, save money to spend it. And we've been absolutely against the wall for years and years and years and years, just earning week to week because the banks didn't want to know about us.
Much like other small family businesses, you know, you save up and you can do a little bit more. Save up, do a little bit more. Yep.
Anyone who's in small business will know to it, you know, painfully aware of the fact that no one wants to talk to you until you've got 3 years worth of financials on the board. That's what counts in order to get any kind of business finance.
Also under your existing structure as well, because we changed structure three times. So we were, you know, led down the path one way and led down the path the other way by people that should know better. And, you know, partnership, trust, more trust, split the trusts up, do this. Ultimately, you just need to be a company. That's what it comes down to. And unfortunately, the banks go, you were a trust before, so we don't even count those years. We don't count those years. Are you a partnership? You don't count those years either. So,
until you're looking at it, you don't know how important certain pieces of utterly arbitrary paper mean.
Yep.
It's we did some calculations on it actually about a year ago,
we estimate
that this business has been only ever sort of just operating as a business as is about 20% of the time, and the rest of the time it has been a growth business. Do you know what I mean? Like 80% of the time, it has been a business that's saving money to keep growing, and only about 20% of that time has it just been holding steady, just earning money and being an actual business as we consider all businesses to be. So because the craft beer segment is so strange where profit margins are really, really very low, but growth is incredibly high, and it's this very, very exciting space where there's opportunity everywhere, but profit margins are really, really low, especially out in wholesale where you're fighting with giant multinational companies. It's this really bizarre space where you've got all this opportunity to grow and you can get a brand really moving, but you can hurt yourself incredibly badly and go under in the blink of an eye if you overextend yourself, because there's just every opportunity to overextend yourself in very, very expensive ways.
Is that kind of why you guys did away with the food trucks and, you know, put in the restaurant side of the taproom business so that you could then, you know, help speed up that process a little bit? I would have thought, you know, you talk to a lot of brewers that do this sort of thing. They never want to deal with food because it's a pain in the ass and extra expense and blah, blah, blah. But was that a means to an end for you guys to take that next step?
Yeah. So the food trucks did very well for us, and they did very well out of us. And we went down the path of we always wanted a kitchen in-house because the food trucks was hard work just to deal with, just even getting them to turn up a lot of the times, because they might get a better deal doing a wedding or something like that. But, you know, we're trying to book them in and get this kind of stuff. But when we went to market with knowing that we're going to have a kitchen, and we were like, well, maybe we'll just subcontract the kitchen out. And so many of these guys came through, and we'd chat to them about stuff, but they wanted to pay nothing for it, no rent, take 100% of the profit and have no risk. And it was just became this point where, well, we just got to do it ourselves. It's just not going to happen otherwise, which was really disappointing to see, but it is what it is.
But it's also every step of the way, it's the same. We always end up, you know, we're always having these business lessons sort of handed to us. Honestly, we really are still just a couple of fucking geeks that know how to make beer and make up silly ideas about beer and just talk shit about it in an entertaining way to people. And you have to learn all this stuff along the way. But it has become abundantly clear to us just that wherever we can, because the business world, it's a really scary place. You grow up thinking that there's grown-ups out there that really know what they're doing. And as you become a grown-up, one day it clicks to you as you're 40-something, you go, holy shit, no one actually knows what the fuck they're doing. Everyone's just making shit up, and everyone's just doing what the fuck they feel like and hoping that it sticks. And at every point in this business we go, when we just have control over ourselves and what we do, and we're not physically relying on any other particular people and what they need to do. Like we can have lots of lovely relationships with pubs and with food trucks and yada, yada, yada. But when it's just in-house and it's ours and we just bring people in and we do it ourselves, then we know where we stand, because we're not one of those big businesses that has a cash flow to absorb any serious mistakes. We can't afford to make a serious mistake. No little craft brewery can afford to make a real mistake, or they're just gone. You know what I mean? So, while it's expensive to build a kitchen, to know that we're bringing it in and we can look at what things cost and we can look at what we're making and we can have all the input into what's actually going on the plate and how much it costs and what profit we're making, et cetera, et cetera. It actually, while it's more expensive and it's more risky for us to put our own money out there to do that, at the end of the day, it's still all our business, and we're not hanging off someone else who might get a better deal out of a wedding suddenly this week and not show up. You know, if you want to be a food venue, as we do, we lean really, really hard on retail. That's another one of our huge lessons, is for God's sake, put the tap room and the kitchen and our venue first, because this is the only place where people will pay you a decent amount of money for your beer.
Absolutely. It's so awesome to hear you guys say that, because
they will give the money to you now.
Yeah.
Not in 2 years and then give you some bullshit reason why they didn't.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it's the only way for people who don't have a massive slush fund behind them to make a living.
Yeah.
I honestly can't. I'd be really interested for you to put it out there, Chris, amongst all the breweries that you speak to. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I wonder if there's any brewery of our size or smaller who could actually survive as a wholesale operation without also being a pub. Like, you have to be a bar in order to fund.
I'd say from the people that I've spoken to, that you would just have just almost 100% agreement, unless you're something a little bit different. Maybe you're something like so we'll touch on Van Diemen, who – you know, has that real mail order type side of things, and creating those beers that are left of center and something a little bit special, heading more towards the, you know, the Topher at Wildflower kind of, you know, that sort of, something a little bit different.
He's still selling at retail though. He's still selling retail. So regardless of whether it's in online or not, he's not been a wholesale business, which is where it hurts, because there's no money in wholesale. It's absolute garbage. I can tell you what, the pubs make some money out of it.
And you've got 10 little craft breweries all trying to get onto one tap to serve their beer.
This is not to have a whinge. This is actually, I honestly think this is incredibly interesting. I think this is the next place that all the wonderful supporters of craft beer really need to start looking at things. This is, I don't know. I feel like this is a really interesting thing to think about, is that, this whole craft beer movement, like the beer behemoth in Australia, is a shrinking market. The great monstrous effigy of Australian beer is shrinking, but there's this little portion in it which is craft beer, which is going crazy and growing like mad year on year on year. And that is built on the goodwill of people who want to support little businesses who are doing something interesting. But I do think the only businesses that are actually making any money on this in the wholesale market is actually the giant companies who are making pretend craft beer based on branding things like these little businesses. And every single one of those little businesses that people are desperate to support are only making money because they're also being a pub, which is not the thing that they really were in the first place. They're also being a pub, which is nice. It's nice to see people, and it's nice to be up close and personal. But if you really, you know what I mean? Like, if you're really interested in the craft beer movement as an independent movement of wholesale producers, I think it's important to realize that that is almost completely unsustainable unless you're also pretending to be another kind of business. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm hearing you. I'm hearing
and
you.
The only people are actually really making money out of this boom is your Lion Nathans, your CUBs, your Asahis, who have these brands that they've either purchased the credibility of independent breweries and made them their own, or invented them out of nowhere, like, I don't know, Coles did with
Steam Rail.
What was that thing called? Yenda.
Yenda.
You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. And they're able to make money on it because they've already got these efficiencies in these gigantic production facilities where they can now charge slightly more margin on that product to make better money on it. So I think this is not to have a whinge. It's really not. It's just talking about economic realities. And I always just find it in any industry, I like learning about these things generally. It's nice to lift the veil and see how the sausage is made. And I really feel that that's the case. And I'd love to hear from anyone who's not simply a one-man show selling stuff mail order direct over the internet. I'd love to see a model for a wholesale craft brewery that actually just survives being that, because the space is so dominated by these giant companies who, it really should be said as well, literally pay for and own 90% of the taps in this country, if not more.
Completely illegal in the US. The land of the free, it's illegal to own taps.
It's considered illegal anti-competitive behaviour in most of the developed world.
Hey, Phil, I like the sound of your voice, but I haven't heard enough of it because someone's been up on there. You said he'd get up on his soapbox. So can I turn it to you and just have a chat with you for a moment? Yeah, yeah, good.
Yeah. Ryan, shut the fuck up.
It's interesting, man.
It is very – no, it's great, but I'm just thinking –
Yeah, but Ryan does tend to do this, and then he realizes the next day that he's doing this. And then
it's great, but I'm just thinking we're about almost an hour in, and we haven't even talked about your beers yet. And I'm thinking, Phil, I think you do something with some beer making and that, don't you, over there? So
Little bits and pieces,
Talk about your range. Give us a bit of an overview about what you create.
So we're, and this is thanks to Ryan because he's dragged me over to some other styles occasionally. But we're pretty eclectic on our beer styles. We've got 54 different beers, I think, at the moment that we make. And we probably add one every few months to that. So we do everything from Berliner Weiss, barrel-aged sours, all the way through to stouts, barrel-aged stouts, all this kind of stuff. We were really known early days on from having a barley wine, which was based on...
Was that your first beer?
Brooklyn Brewing. It was the first beer we ever brewed on our commercial kit in my garage. So, yes. And that's Galactibus. So we really kind of hit the headlines on that one.
Sorry, you were saying that was based on a Brooklyn
Monster. So, yeah, which I don't think that exists
it's discontinued
anymore,
because it was named after Monster, the stray cat that used to live in Brooklyn Brewery. And then when Monster the cat died, they retired the beer, which I think actually really sweet of them to do so.
Yeah.
Also, it probably didn't. Yeah. It probably didn't sell very well because it's fucking. But
it's beautiful. Yeah, but Ryan showed me that beer, and I was really curious about it, so I did one as well. So that's kind of we're known for a bit more eclectic beers, I guess. We've got our punter gen
core range,
punter range kind of thing. I'd like to say. And then we've got the other ones that people just like to get really stuck into and get really.
We want to touch every single part of the beer. I thought about sentence really badly. I was trying to figure out. And it's just not. Thanks for helping.
We want to be a Rolf Harris of the beer world.
Sentence completely. Thanks. We want to go to every single place that beer can go, I think.
Yep.
But in every step of the way, when we've had to, you know, as a business, you end up having these discussions where you think about these things and you don't know what you are to begin with, but then you seem to sort of form an identity as you go along. And it was as we had a tap room and as we met all these wonderful supporters of ours that we sort of learned from them who we are. And I think we're the guys who... yes, we'll make every single style out there and we'll do every single hybrid style that we can think of. But in every single instance, we want it to be interesting and exciting, but at the same time, we want it to be accessible. So I don't think we'd do some, even if we're doing a blended multi-barrel.
He's taking over, isn't he?
Even if we're doing a massive Belgian triple crossover barrel-aged thingamajig, it will be an accessible, delicious beer.
Where's the mute button?
End of fucking story.
Hey, speaking of big beers, yeah.
Chris, can I just talk about one thing though? Can I just talk about one thing when it comes to our beer philosophy? So, yes, we want to be accessible. We want to show people a range of beers. We want to be able to bring in people that don't drink beers and convert them to going, actually, I like that style of beer. I'll continue to drink beer. But one thing that we attempted once and never again was. Which is a bit of a trend going on at the moment, which is using essences to generate flavors of beer. We did it once and we'll never do it again because I pretty much cracked the fucking shits over it. And so everything we do now is with natural products. It's with real berries, real fruits, real juices, real purees sourced all around Australia, which is also adds a lot of cost to the product, but... I think the product speaks for itself that it's actually a far better product.
In full disclosure, we should say that we occasionally use extracts, which it should be noted is a very different thing, even though it starts with the same letter as an essence.
Thank you for the lesson in numbers, in letters.
You will never get the complexity out of an extract or an essence that you'll get out of the real product, but I think some extracts can, especially in a highly dilute product like beer, give you some of that nuance that you were looking for, but an extract.
Yeah. Extract is a very different thing to an essence. So essence is lab generated. Extract is actually made from a real real plant. That's what we need. That's what people need to understand. So, but we don't actually. I'm drinking a face inverter right now, and you know what goes into that? 200 litres of lemon juice from Mildura. So, and it is what it is. And people go, oh, it's not this, it's not sour as much as last time. It's like, changes. Because the lemons are probably ripe at this time of year.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. You know, it's just one of those things. It's going to be fluctuations. So, I'm really, I don't want to be the grumpy brewer, which I'm known as, but. You know, I see the goods and the bads of the industry at the moment, and we don't want to be going down the path of giving a unauthentic product to the punters, because they will sniff it out and they'll move on, and it's not what we want.
Let's stay
to
with the good then, and let's talk about hype beers. Have you got a hype beer on your hands with Sludge Beast?
Maybe,
supposedly. The worst beer
it took, a while. That's it took right. a while to land. So, I mean, Sludge Beast is almost as old as Galacticus, but
all of a sudden, it just seems like I'm seeing it everywhere.
I had to rewrite the whole bloody recipe because it's unbrewable, basically. So, and it was all good idea in Ryan and Iron Head, but it was not realistic back in the day. So,
shall we tell the story of where Sludge Beast got his name?
Yeah, come on.
You can tell the story. Yeah,
you're good at telling
stories.
I'll give the real fucking short version. Phil and I, back in the shed, would brew together with our good mate Ian, who we've dedicated a beer to, which is our WIPA 50s Dalrymples, Mr. Ian Dalrymple. We would all brew together, and we tasked each other with making imperial stouts each. We all went home, made imperial stouts, and then several weeks later came back together and tried them. And there were different things about each of our imperial stouts that we all liked. And then we kind of left it there. And I had this brain fart that here's what we should do. We like a bit of that. We like a bit of that. We like a bit of that. I'll just take all three recipes and I'll just bung them together into one uber recipe. And that will be the recipe, understanding really fuck all about the science of cooking. And so I got the grain bill done at a brew shop, got it all crushed up so there's nothing anyone could do about it. And then we threw it in the mash tun and it immediately went nowhere. It just sat there because it was a massive mass of oats and sugar that just didn't want to move. And so in order to even get it out of the mash tun, it had to be perpetually agitated and scraped on the bottom of the mash tun.
I like to think of it as being milked. It had to be milked.
Launched out of the damn thing under duress to get a tiny amount of beer out of it. And then every bottle that we bottled off had a good 2 inches worth of goo in the bottom of it. And it was fucking delicious. The top was great, but if you made the mistake of pouring the bottle too far and getting some of that sludge in your glass, it was the nastiest, grittiest. It was like bitumen had made its way into it. So that was the Sludge Beast, which would punish you. It was delicious, but would punish you for attempting to even approach it. And that persevered. And to Phil's credit, in making it into a brewable recipe, he brought it onto, I would say, just this side of achievable, just into the human world as far as we need it to just get out of the mash tun, because it's still a motherfucker to make.
So to put it into context for the brewers out there, how normal beer, we'll do a sparge and it'll take an hour. So, 60-minute sparge and it'll be all into kettle. But Sludge Beast is between 4 and 5 hours of sparging to get it across. And you have to be watching your vacuum lines and everything like that all the way through. Your eyes are on it. You can't walk away from it. It's a fucking pain in the ass. It's an understatement. So when people go, and when I hear from the sales team, Ryan and Mikey, oh, no, we've run out of Sludge Beast. Oh, no, I only brewed that 2 months ago. I'm like, fuck you guys. Fuck you. So,
isn't it kicked off?
That was meant to last us all winter. You sold it all. Fuck you.
Ruin our game.
Speaking of winter, at the end of winter, the famous day, Record Store Day, and I know you guys brewed a beer for it a few times. Are you doing one again this year?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Coming up again. Oh,
we'll be doing Scratchy's in tank at the moment, actually. So
Black IPA.
Our beloved Black IPA, which was our we were asked to make a Black IPA, and both Phil and I had a rare moment of total agreement in that we hated Black IPAs completely, and we were asked to make one, and so we tasked ourselves with making one that we actually enjoyed, and we did that because we specifically went to the Wheat Sheaf, I think, and went and got every Black IPA they had, and we analyzed them and why we didn't like them. And I think it was something to do with a piney hop character along with a sharp roasted malt character.
And they were all sweet. Yes. They were all sweet. They were like IPA.
Yeah.
They should be dry. Dry,
texture
dry, dry, dry.
In that piney, smashing against bitter texture. And so what we decided to do then is go for more of a Christmas cakey thing, but in a drier black beer. So we're going for fruitier hops to allow the hops to express a different character and allow the roasted malt to provide the bitterness, while in a drier beer that's not going to glue it all up. Yeah, and to make something that's a little more sessionable, but also has all that wonderful interplay, that is now one of my favorite beers, because it's probably one of the hardest, what would you call it, creative development sessions we've done, really.
Yeah, but one thing that always blows me away about Scratch Vodka, and that there's some R&D and some thesis in there to be had, is it's the one beer that doesn't seem to age or oxidize. So whether that's because there's dark malt involved or what's going on there, but it doesn't seem to fall the wayside like an IPA does. And by the way, any brewers out there, so it's Simcoe Amarillo and Citra in it, which great combinations, full stop. But something about the dark malts seems to not age like a normal IPA would.
I don't think it's realistic that it's not oxidizing. I don't think it's somehow defying physics.
I'm not getting oxidized characters coming through in it. Like I had a 13-month-old one in the fridge about 2 weeks ago, and it is fantastic. It was as good as the day.
Here's what I'm starting to think. So, I think when it comes to oxidation, I'm thinking it's the sharpness and the dryness that are overshadowing any oxidation characters, because there's so much going on in there. I think there are oxidation characters potentially creep in after a year or so, but they're just you don't see them in there. And I think sweeter, lighter beers, like a very light double IPA, for instance, will show oxidation really early, because it's that caramelly spectrum where you start to really notice those raisiny, cardboardy characters that is oxidation. Yeah, and I think this is just the opposite of that. It's a dry, sharp, also roasty beer where oxidation just doesn't get a look in, because it's a fairly subtle character, really. But
there's no crystal in there to bloody turn into shit.
You guys got really deep on this one for me. I just wanted to know if you were music lovers.
Sorry, Chris. Sorry, we just deleted all of that.
I just wanted to know if you were music lovers and if that was why you brewed the beer.
No.
Not music lovers.
Well, Ryan is. Ryan, like most things, he talked to me about books, or he talked to him about movies, or he talked to him about music. He'll nerd out on you. He spent too many times with a bong and not enough work to keep him occupied.
Listen, dickhead. Yeah. I may be a humanities geek and a loudmouth.
Oh, hold on. What did you study, Ryan? What did you say?
Hey, Ryan.
I think I was just talking to yourself. That's a philosophy. No one else.
I've got one where you can flex all of this knowledge that you learned at university. Well, not really. I want to know about your branding. So at some stage during a brewery's life cycle, there's always this question of, should we rebrand, you know, and often that decision comes with the outcome of cleaning things up a little bit. You've seen it a lot. Exit Brewing, Black Ops, Bolter probably already there, Cheeky Monkey, all these breweries that sort of might have had something a little bit sort of cheeky and playful about their brand take a bit of a family approach, a bit more of a uniformed approach. And for some people, they feel like it loses a little bit of the character of the original brand. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you guys have considered or that maybe you think is on your horizon, or you just want to stick with the whole, you know, the very unique can art that you've got?
Now, Ryan, before you get into this, because I know you're about to
launch, I'm ready to launch.
I know. But one thing I think I want to cover was that we come basically from an art background, which is in the games. So there's a lot of influence from that, isn't there?
Yep.
Yeah. And like if you look at Garage Project where everything's unique, that's also one of our influences. Like we really looked up to those guys. Not to say we haven't done any readjustment on the brand. We have. But if we lose that and we become another generic brewery,
I'll
be pretty sad. But Ryan, fill your boots.
And go.
we had a long time when we were applying for licensing and stuff like that. We had a good year in which we weren't allowed to have a producer's license and weren't allowed to sell beer to the public, in which to, while we were filling out forms and waiting for things to happen, we had a long time to talk about exactly the kind of brand we would like to be. And the stuff that got us excited, probably because of the gamers that we are, is, and especially at the time when we were gamers, which wasn't quite, it was a big business then, but it's on par with Hollywood these days. It wasn't then. We were
bigger than Hollywood, isn't it?
Probably. It probably makes more money than Hollywood.
I think it is.
We were in that nerdy Gen X sort of atmosphere where we felt like being this kind of media geek you're a little on the outside as well. So you want to be a little perverse and you want to have some in jokes for your mates and you want to be commenting on what's out there. And you got to remember this whole brewery was built on the idea that we had other jobs. Phil was a refrigeration mechanic and I was a guy outselling beer for other people, and we could do this thing on the weekends and we could just have some commentary on what's going on. We could put out the first barley wine in a tinny in Australia because we had another job. We could just go, why not have tinnies of barley wine? That'll be fucking spasmo. Let's make it. Let's call it fucking Galactopus. It's like a giant galactic octopus that eats the goddamn world. This shit's wicked. Yeah, look at this shit. Yeah, man. And that was what it was. And so I do think it's that same sort of excited, energetic, creative energy, which you don't want to overthink too much. You really want to just go with your gut, with what's exciting, and you don't want to over consider and over market research your brand, or you're going to end up being Bolter, which, let's face it, was IKEA from the start. It was so vanilla. Everyone could see, well, you could just have a countdown clock as to when CUB is going to buy this boring ass thing. No matter how good the beer is, it's boring. It's bad shit. It's just ready to slot right in on the fucking shelf with everything else. You know what I mean? It's like we're here to.
I actually appreciate it for simplicity.
Fucking different. What are we here to do? If I want to make money, I can go to work for someone else and do something boring. You know what I mean? Like, but we're not making a great deal of money, but if we're, for fuck's sake, we're going to express ourselves, and we can do so in a way that, and I'm not saying this to be antagonistic to anyone, but we want to keep ourselves interested. We want to have fun because God knows we work more than normal work hours and we don't make a great deal of money. We better express ourselves and have a fun time doing it. And I think we've honed it over the years to a place where it's not an antagonistic thing, but we're always having a commentary on what's going on, and we're always having a cheeky poke at the beer industry and just throwing out wild ideas of things that excite us. And we actually put for all the silliness and good time of it, we put a great deal of effort into and a lot of money into the design. We now really engage serious artists and designers into doing what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, there's something you can definitely see that there's a lot of work into that middle part of the section. And when you line them up.
It would be so much cheaper to just have our logo in different colors. on each.
Yeah,
yeah, just change the fucking colour and call it Stepney. Oh,
why don't we name it after the street that we're on, you know? Like, oh my God. Yeah. No, it takes a lot of effort.
Tell me what you really think.
It's really worth it. If you want to demonstrate to people, like, I really mean it. It's like, it's my job to get this beer into people's mouths in the first place, and it's Phil's job in the quality of the beer to keep them coming back. You know, like, there's a lot of noise on the shelf, and I really want to demonstrate as much as possible within that 2 seconds that people look at the thing that here are people who are showing you themselves and are speaking to you. But I really don't want it to be just to our narrow geek thing. I want it to be inclusive.
That's the danger you have, don't you? You have the danger of falling into just entertaining yourselves.
I want to welcome absolutely everyone to have fun in our weird little clique. You know, and I cannot tell you how much it pleases me to be at our bar and see how many times we force ordinary people to say the word schwangberry or or I don't know, I'll have the naked objector or galactopus or sludge beast, please. And just how many times total strangers need to say these silly words in order to get a beer out of us? It's like, that's one of the fringe benefits that I didn't know was gonna happen. But yeah, it's true. An awful lot of thought goes into it, and it's very, very nice to hear the feedback that people enjoy it, because yeah, it's. You do have to fight to express yourself, because there's all sorts of pressure, especially as the thing gets bigger and there's more people's careers and money dependent on this thing. There's all sorts of pressure to be.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because the bigger you get, the more conservative you want, because you don't want to upset people.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
so we run to this, we run, you know, you and that's what you see a lot. A lot of people start conservative. You have to fight
that, and I think you really can. You can be exciting and you can be fun, and you don't have to. You don't have to hurt people's feelings. You can invite people to your weird party. That's the way to do it, you know, and it never has to encroach on anyone's feelings. We don't have to make a political statement, but we can always be interesting. If we've had enough sleep, I've had times when I need to brand something today and I just don't have it in me, and I have often consulted with myself, like, what would Ryan do if Ryan was here? And it's weird when that happens, but you know
it is does sound sort of weird.
You know what he does? He comes and talks to Phil. Phil's like that shit out.
I tell you, yeah. I want to take credit for it all, but when you nail him, Phil will he'll give
when
you
nail him.
Yeah, when you
a very close relationship.
When I pin Phil down of like, listen, I am all burned out, I have no ideas left, and I hate everything and I hate everyone and I want to crawl up in bed for a month, he'll come up with Face Inverter out of the clear blue sky. And that was the seed crystal of the idea that led to one of the best labels we've got.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and I want to also reiterate something that Ryan was saying, which is that we're surrounded by incredible artists that we bring into our fold to get us to do some of these labels, and we let them run free. Not on all of them, but we do let them run free occasionally, and they always surprise us about how good they can do artwork. And we want to do that. We want to really promote art very much as well.
I actually see it as a huge influence, and it was a real pleasure and an honor to work with Collective Arts from Canada. Last year, we actually did a collaboration with them. Those guys are on the money in what they're doing. They're Canadian, and they have, I think there's some government support in what they're doing. They actually have like an artists collective that they are perpetually adding to, where they're essentially it's not just every new beer that they do, but every batch of every beer they do, they're putting new artwork on the cans by putting out this call to commission artworks where people submit art and they select stuff to put on their can labels. And it's an incredible, beautiful thing that they're doing, where they've commissioned something like over 900 unique artworks now, and they provide a space for artists on their website to sell their work, and they're showcasing stuff not in stuffy galleries where only select people go, but on the shelf in bottle shops and supermarkets there, I think the whole space of branding has been co-opted by really, really boring people. And I think, honestly, we're just scraping the surface, especially after dealing with those guys last year. We've been so energized to try and work with new technologies and just, you know, I don't know, I don't want to use any buzzwords, but, you know, by interfacing with different groups in different sectors, man, to really get some, to just to re-engage what so much of what we look at all fucking day, every fucking day, is someone's goddamn brand, someone trying to stuff their fucking brand down our throat because this advertising is pasted on everything. Imagine if that stuff was actually art. If you just got people to really speak their minds and just slapped it on there, because all we're trying to do is catch eyeballs. Imagine if that was real artwork that was really saying something. That to me is as exciting as branding can get, because we're all selling our souls to the devil here in the commercial space. But if you're just catching eyeballs, why not catch them with genuinely appealing, exciting, real art?
Fair enough.
And on that real art, as it does in real life, people like it and people don't like it as well. So you get, at least you're getting a response. So yeah, that's what we get as well.
And Ryan has given us a number of responses tonight. He's been very passionate about it.
I think I wore myself out with that one.
Yeah. Well, guys, I've just got to say thank you for inviting me to your weird party tonight. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I think this might be the.
Sorry, Chris.
No, it's okay.
Really sorry.
This might be the first one, because so with every interview I do, I always give myself a bit of a plan, and I think probably about. I don't even think we started recording. I thought, I'm not going to fucking need that tonight, because I think these two guys are going to lead the discussion. So all those questions that I had,
we're just going to
just take
out.
It off on tangents, and we'll go for 90 minutes just about. That's all right. It was a special one. I think we've offended the Victorian government. We've offended Bolter Brewing. You've offended, I don't know, the South Australian wine region. And
I want to be perfectly clear. I am not poo-pooing Bolter's excellent quality beer. I'm just saying it looks exactly like IKEA. That's all I'm saying. And you know what?
You know what?
IKEA's fucking popular, so well done, son. Yeah. Well done.
But I also think in their defense, I think they express themselves in other ways with some amazing video content, you've got to say. You've got to tip your hat.
Some really good surfing, some good shark punching.
No, you dickhead. They're cool. They're videos where they don't take themselves too seriously. I think that's genius stuff.
I have to tell you, I haven't had much – interaction with him, but the one serious interpersonal interaction I had with Bolter was superb. In that we both released a beer, a limited release beer in the same week, called, what was it called? It was that wheat beer. Called Insert Witty Beer Name Here.
Both had the same name.
We beat him to the punch about 2 weeks.
We were a couple of weeks ahead. We had a beer called Insert Witty Beer Name Here. We were trying to build another brewery at the time. We had no creative gas left in the tank, and it was a wit. And it was like, oh, here's a witty. Make up your own damn witty beer name. And I think they had a very, very similar beer name. Like it was called like someone just pointed it out on Instagram, like side by side. Oh, here's this and that. And immediately Bolter got in touch and said, oh, shit, guys, look, sorry, I had no idea, da-da-da-da-da. If you want, we can pull it. It's really just a limited release. And the nice thing about it was, rather than getting into a whole fucking business-to-business IP debate, it was just a really nice conversation between people who were like, shit, great minds think alike. Aren't we in the same place? And it was honestly just three messages back and forth. There was a lot of laughter, and we're like, shit, we should really get together and do something. You guys are all right, and you guys are all right. End of story. You know, it was great. It was really, really nice.
If that's not a great way to sum up this whole craft beer industry, I don't know what is, because he's a great beer part.
Isn't that the way it should be? And it's worth preserving. Yeah, I think that's one of the big things about the craft beer industry is we're all genuine people in this for the long haul, because if you're in it to make money, you're doing something else. So
you've got a real job.
At every festival, the brewers get together and everyone is automatically on the same page. They are people who've put genuine human experiences in front of real money, and that was no exception. And if there's a way for us to collaborate more and get together more in the face of these giant, this giant industry that we're up against out there in the market, if there's a way for us to get together more and get together better and express our genuine love of just the human side of it, like, I want to know it and I want to foster that, because there's got to be more to it than just growing up your cool little brand in order to get bought out by a fucking multinational company and just put on the shelf with a bunch of others. Because I don't think that's what the...
It's Phil snoring down there.
I don't think that's what the people at Podcast Bureau are really in it for. It's not just
Chris, if you what you do, can you keep it running? Just sign out. I'll sign out. And Ryan can just talk to himself.
I had better sign out because we have gone way over time tonight, and it's only because I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you. Thanks for ruining my whole script and everything, but it's been great. I've loved it. I think there's been a bit of stuff in here for everybody. Like, the beer nerds are going to nerd out about the steam. You've got the branding stuff. You've got the, you know, story of the sludge beast, all that. It's just been a great conversation, which is exactly what I try and do with these things, because I too love this industry that we're all a part of. I count myself as being part of it, even though it's not my job, it's my hobby. But I love it. And, so thanks for your time today. And while I haven't had more than one of your beers, I'm sorry. It is hard to get them down here in Tasmania. Maybe that'll change one day.
I'll tell you when to go. Cool Wine. Cool Wine gets the lot. Nikki's an absolute champ. Call out to Nikki at Cool Wine. Yeah, buddy.
Cool Wine, yeah. All right, boys. Thanks for your time tonight. You can go and finish off all those extra beers. And I reckon it's probably just about time for a snooze.
I'm going to keep
going. I'm going to take your time, guys.
Before the sun comes up. I'm not finished. You're not going to come here.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.